Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Labyrinth in the News. Today is the 22nd day of the self-existing Owl Moon of Form, Dali, Crown Chakra, White Rhythmic Wizard Day. The affirmation is, I organize in order to enchant, balancing receptivity. I seal the output of timelessness with the rhythmic tone of equality. I am guided by my own power doubled, the power of timelessness. It's also Gregorian calendar, Monday, November 8th, 2010. I'm your host, Christiana, coming to you live from the Couve. That's Vancouver, Washington, across the river from Portland, Oregon. My lead-in music is the first cut Icos, short for Icosahedron, the water symbol in sacred geometry, off of Susan Alexander's CD, Sequentia. If any of you would like to chat while we are on the air, please go to Christiana-Anea at blogtalkradio.com. My guest today is Ben Nicholson, artist, writer, professor, and the other keynote speaker at the 2010 Labyrinth Society gathering starting this week in New Harmony, Indiana. Thank you, Ben, for joining me today.
It's great to be with you, Christiana, and I love the music that you played at the beginning.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I can hear you.
Okay. Okay. If you would mind getting a little closer to whatever speaker, you're a little faint in the background, and I don't want to, I always
seem
to overpower my
guest.
That's much better. Thank you. Yes, that's terrific. I met you at the 2009 gathering, and I watched your sister ride her beautiful Arabian horse around the labyrinth you designed for her on a ranch in New Mexico. How many labyrinths have you designed to date?
Oh, that's a pregnant question there. the first one I designed was in England for a beautiful Jacobean 16th century house, and I made a design for their garden, and it's still in existence. It's probably 15 years old now. I've made a few for Cordelia, three, and the majority that I've made and designed are on paper and have made at least 30 different new ones, and then literally hundreds that are genetic chaff. And for the New Harmony gathering, I've made three new ones that are laid out on the grounds. And so we should have some new kinds of movements in those designs.
So you are, you were born and raised in, correct me if I'm wrong, in South Africa?
No, England. And
I
have lived in the United States for about 30 years and still have my British passport, actually.
Well, but where did you first, the reason why I asked that question, maybe that's Cordelia who has lived a long time in South Africa, is that correct? I know Africa.
Yeah, Cordelia lived in Kenya for a while, a few years, before coming to America. And in fact, we came very much at the same time.
Okay. So where did you first learn about labyrinths or hear about them or become aware of them?
Well, 25 years ago, I was working on a project about a geometric pavement in Florence, in Italy, in a building designed by Michelangelo. It's a lost geometric pavement. And for that research was looking through Cilio's five books of architecture made in 1537. And there were a page of illustrations of a garden labyrinths in that book. So that really got me going. And then previously to that, 30 years ago, I made a walking trip of Greece and Crete to research Greek geometric vases and the meanders on those vases, and went down to Knossos and then also to the cave of Dictae where Zeus was born. And so I started working on labyrinths before I knew labyrinths existed, in the form of Greek geometric pottery meanders from 750 BC. So once I'd begun to analyze the pavement in Florence, I realized that one of the panel designs was very labyrinthine in order. And I thought, you know, I have to figure these things out and start studying them. And so that's when it began. It began via the book rather than the feet, you might say, because I work in scholarship and love to read and pick things apart. So it was really a scholastic beginning, but with visceral intentions and visceral beginnings from previous journeys around Europe.
So, in Cilio's books, do they just describe the design itself? Do they attribute what do they say it's for? Do they say what it's for, or do they just have the designs? I'm not familiar with that work. That ancient.
Well, by that time, the Renaissance labyrinths were going from monocursal to multicursal, i.e. mazes, designs. And Cilio's labyrinths, which are actually five-circuit labyrinths, are related to Roman pavement designs. So they were designed as hedge mazes for gardens. He was illustrating those designs for garden use.
I see. And this was a fashion in those days to have. Now I'm very familiar with the hedge maze, English hedge mazes, and it was something. It was a well known design piece in many formal English gardens. And what was it the same type of impulse in Cilio's day to have these mazes or laid out patterns in the formal gardens in France or Italy?
Well, they would have had a couple of applications, one which I'm speculating on and the other which is known. The first, which I would speculate on, would be knee-high knot mazes, in other words, for herb gardens and to be able to walk through the center of cloisters of the churches and so on. And then, of course, there are the later mazes that we know so well that are hedge mazes and were gardens of earthly delights and would have sculptures in them and be used for all sorts of things going on that are more related to naked men and women in marble statues than they are perhaps to our own tradition of walking comfortably around and around in circles.
So, I see. Okay. Well, that explains a little bit. Tell us a bit about the exhibits you produced for the Whitney Museum and the Venice Biennial of Architecture. What did you show there?
For the Whitney Museum in New York City, there was an exhibition called Architecture by Numbers. And so at that exhibition, I showed 12 of my labyrinth drawings, an enormous big drawing of what many people call sacred geometry, And then sheets out of my sketchbook, which is currently on exhibition in Spain, actually. And that exhibition wanted to show the architecture community the kind of power of number and the power of geometry as an organizing principle. And my role in the exhibition, which is a group exhibition, was to show its antique origins and also its application in a very direct means and manner through moving through space within a labyrinth. The next exhibition that was in 2008 was at the Venice Biennale of Architecture, which is a wonderful adventure. And I was able to show over 200 drawings there, the sum products of the last 12 years of work. They're all hand done. They're all made in exactly the same way. I use lead and a yellow pencil that I've been actually hunting all over the world for because they stopped making them in England. And so I kind of ran out of my color. So people in friends in Australia and certainly in England have been sending ones, these lead pencils out to me. But the show in Venice was in a exhibition about things that really couldn't be built and things that were kind of beyond the imagination. That was the overall theme of the Biennale. And so the drawings fit really well into that.
Oh, I see. And okay, so now I have lots of questions. What paper, kind of paper do you use for these drawings, and why is this particular pencil so important?
Well, for the Whitney Museum, I had a stock of 1957 Wattman watercolor paper, which is a very beautiful, and it's made in 1957, I might add. Beautiful paper. It's ethereal. It just floats through the air. It's got enough density, a beautiful hard surface, and it's very transparent. It's really the muslin of papers. Now, the drawings for the Venice Biennale were made all on architectural squared tracing paper. It would have been 20 years' work rather than 10 years' work to have drawn it all on Wattman paper. So I thought, okay, I'll just compromise and use a kind of crappy architecture drawing paper. The pencil that I use is a Derwent yellow ochre. I have a little, in fact, I've kept every stub of pencil that I've ever used. It's, I don't know, at least 100 little stubs that are about half an inch long of these pencils. And then I use a set of drafting instruments, Kerfler and Essler drafting instruments, and it's all, everything is done by hand.
And why is this pencil so different? Or what is it, what makes this? I'm sorry, because I'm just intrigued by this, so I'm sort of focusing on this, fixating on it. What makes this particular pencil, out of all the drafting pencils and the gazillion pencils out there, why is this one, that particular one, so valuable to this type of drawing, or lends itself to this kind of drawing for you?
Well, yellow ochre is one of the most fundamental earth colors that is kind of dug out of the ground, as they say. And it glows with a lovely, earthy, autumny yellow color. And that's one matter. So they look great on the paper. But between you and me, and I hope no one's listening, it's extremely easy to use. And every colored pencil has a carriage which carries the pigment. And some are really dusty and chalky, and some are super waxy and greasy. And this particular pencil goes on like a dream, and it stays on the paper. It doesn't drift. And I just hope no one is listening. Have to share technical
Technical magic. Because you can't find them very, very in very many places. So.
No, you can't.
Oh, boy. But doesn't the effect change from the paper you use? So isn't it very different on the old, the 1957 beautiful ethereal paper as it is on the drafting paper?
Yes, it is. And I sort of cry that I didn't do this properly and hoped that I would live for another 10 years to have done it right. But, you know, one compromises in life, and this was mine. The effect on the tracing paper that I'm using, the color, I don't know, it doesn't talk back to you in the same way as it does on the Wattman paper. And for me, I like to draw very carefully labyrinths because it is a meditation actually to draw them. And some take a week to do, the big ones. And as your pencil colors in the pathway, it's a lovely experience. And the way of drawing is terribly important to me. I mean, I'll never kind of do an inch and then do another inch somewhere else. I color in the path all the way to the center, all the way back, down one line, one edge, and then along the other edge. And then I go back in there and color at the center. So drawing for me has always been a meditation, and I feel that drawing is one way of practicing labyrinths, and walking is another. And I can assure you that drawing for 7 hours straight, a single labyrinth, you really get to know it.
And the paper, the beautiful old paper, it takes longer to do on that paper because it's is it finer? Is it? I mean, why you can't work as fast as quickly on that paper as you can with the regular tracing paper?
That's right. I would have to lay out a grid of lines, which can take many, many hours to do when it's done carefully. And the paper that I use, the drafting paper I use, has already got quarter-inch squares on it. So you don't really notice them when you look at them. In fact, it's the last thing that you see, and it's really not a problem. But to do it by hand from a standing start is a lovely thing to do, but 200 of them, that's going to be a lot. That's going to be a real
All right.
lot.
All right. Okay, so I just want to get to this is a marvelous image that I'm getting. Now, you do this on a big drafting table, and like an architecture table, like a tilted table, or is it flat?
Yes. No, I have a pair of beautiful French drafting tables, which I actually found in a rummage sale in two different places made by the same company. They're 1950s drafting tables, and they're fabulously balanced. I love those drafting tables. They're rock solid. And depending on what size paper I'm using, I'll use the big table or the little table. And then I have a little side table, and I have a piece of purple velvet that has very high pile. So when I put down a pencil or anything on that high pile velvet, my fingers can kind of dip right into the velvet and pick up the pencil very easily. So the whole process is, I love to draw. I'm at my happiest in life drawing. It is just a lovely experience. And to draw labyrinths makes it doubly wonderful.
You're talking about sacred geometry in your keynote speech, and so I'm getting this feeling that this is as much a meditative experience for you. You're drawing for 7 hours, and so this is you're actually absorbed tactilely in the sacred geometry of these labyrinths that you're making. Have you experienced that those Zen moments, like you would do if you were running or biking in a rhythmic way, and you get into that space, or that, you know, that time out of time space?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Have you experienced that?
Well, absolutely. It's been 12 years of drawing, and maybe even longer, actually. But I certainly 12 years of drawing labyrinths. I mean, the moment that... I mean, when you do the same thing for 12 years, and everything is yellow circles, each drawing takes on all of the sensations and the experiences and the emotions of the time in which you draw them. And some glow, because I might have had a very rich experience at that time, and some are, you know, frankly, they're fraught. I can tell when I look at the drawings, although they all look the same, which ones hum and which ones don't. And what I'm really interested in the way that drawing is done in this way, is going very, very close to the bone of minimalist and minimal expression. In other words, allowing one's whole body and whole sense of being to be exemplified by a very, very simple, straightforward drawing. The next decade, what I'd love to do is to do everything by hand with a Japanese brush. And one of my students gave me a beautiful ink set, a Japanese ink set, and I have it in my studio, and I kind of look at it every few years and say that's where I'm going to go next, is to let go of the compass and let go of the intricacy of Western drafting and do everything by hand. I think that's, again, don't tell anybody, but I think that's where I'm going to go next.
Well, you've traveled, you're a world traveler. Have you visited other labyrinths in your travels? And if so, which ones in particular held your interest and why?
Well, I would go this in a couple of ways. The traveling that I like to do most of all is actually in my head, and I love to visit the great drawings of labyrinth makers through books. Some I've seen in the original, the early harmonist labyrinth drawings I've seen in Pennsylvania. And they're really beautiful, because I feel great empathy for labyrinth designers who work on pencil or ink on paper. So the ones that I like the most, I have to say, the manuscript drawings of Chartres Cathedral's labyrinth that was made 100 years before Chartres was laid, those are mesmerizing. Another scholar, monk, Gossenbrot, his drawings are absolutely fabulous. So that's one kind of labyrinth that I visited in books. Another that I have visited, but I've never actually been there, would be the Roman labyrinths in North Africa. I'm dying to go there. I've drawn them all, spent hours and hours on each one, and have kind of pored over books about them. I have great empathy for those. So that's one group. Then there are the built ones. There is a labyrinth in northern Lincolnshire, which is the county where I was born, overlooking the Humber River, and it's a turf labyrinth. And the aspect of this design overlooking the Humber, the River Trent, ultimately, is, oh my goodness, it's so old. You can feel the age in that design. It's just rich and ripe and earthy and nicely maintained, and the cuts into the turf are really dramatic. Place is terribly important to me. I believe in what is termed a sacred geography. Kind of strange term, but nevertheless, it'll do as a placeholder. Spots on, in the world where a lot of people have walked previously or done something previously is very, very important to me. In the United States, I think the most beautiful and the most moving labyrinth I've witnessed was on last year, actually. You may have been there, too. When we went to visit someone who'd made a labyrinth out of flowers, and it was so perfectly maintained, and there were so many hundreds of varieties that I felt the richness of the walk through the richness of the flora, and that really surprised me. I was blown away by it, actually, and the situation was pretty good, not great, but it was pretty good. My preference is for labyrinths that are made live and with very, very simple materials. I don't really have a favorite hardstone labyrinth. Chartres is incredible. Those materials and that setting is absolutely magic. And I visited Amiens, the Victorian, I think it's a Victorian remake. I love to have my feet on stone that has been rubbed so hard by centuries of walking and shuffling and so on. I did visit the Chatsworth, I think it's Chatsworth, a hedge maze in England. And it's a stunning setting and perfectly maintained. And that was pretty magical. So, I lean towards ones made out of plant materials. I'm not really keen on concrete labyrinths. I just can't get into them. Or even concrete brick, they don't do it for me. The material is it's too quick. You know, I can just feel the mass production of the materials or the kind of rock soup laying up as it's hardening. From concrete.
Let's talk a little bit about. We don't have a lot of time, and I've still got a lot of questions here for you. So
yeah.
I'm gonna hurry us on a little bit. I sort of took a lot of time before. First of all, let me just ask you, where are those labyrinths in North Africa?
Well, it's Algeria. What is called Algeria? Douga is Dougga. Is one of them. They all have pretty strange names, Arabic names.
Okay.
There is one in Croatia, and Britain has some, Italy. I'm looking down the drawings here. Tunisia has a very one. That's the Douga one. So they're up there.
Oh, okay. Well, you said I've watched you in some of the other geometers, at the 2009 gathering, and you were measuring each labyrinth on the post-gathering tour. What are the key design aspects of labyrinths that give you the information you're looking for? You're researching for a book, I know. And
yes.
Can you just, as an architect, what are some of the key design aspects?
Well, what I'm looking for when I visit labyrinths is their scale, how big the center is, how big the width is, what materials the walls between the paths are made of. All of those dimensions are very, very important to me. Regarding the design, I'm very surprised at how few different designs are used in the United States. There's Chartres Classic, there's the kind of small Chartres, Santa Rosa sometimes, but I don't see a very generous breadth of geometric designs yet, and I'm really fascinated by introducing a new genre of labyrinth, which I think will geometrically and spatially be very good for our time. There are labyrinths where you reciprocate with each other, and sometimes you walk around someone and then sometimes they walk around you. I think we need labyrinths at this time that are much more communal than the ones that we've had from the medieval period and the early Greek period. We need a whole new genre, in my opinion.
Well, you've devised a new geometric system for labyrinth classification. That's a piece of the topic of your keynote address. What is this based upon? And can you speak to a little bit about the process you went through devising this system?
Yes. It began by my research on Greek geometric pottery from 750 BC. The meanders on Greek geometric vases is very, very sophisticated. And on some of those vases, you see people walking, depicted walking, not on the designs per se in three dimensions, but they're graphically depicted as kind of stick figures. And when I was doing my work on geometric meanders, I realized that this period of labyrinth history is not shown in... I'm sorry, the period that the meanders have made is a time when there were no labyrinths that we have today. And we know about the classic labyrinths of early times. We know about the Roman ones a little bit later. But actually, that period of Greek history, I don't know of any labyrinths that come from that period. However, they occur on Greek vases. And so I analyzed them very carefully and realized that there was a little geometric tile that if you rotate it, a little square tile, if you rotate it, it has a couple of lines on it. If you rotate it, all sorts of wonderful things happen. And that's my kind of secret weapon with designing labyrinths, is to make the compression diagram have a series of tiles on them that you can rotate and have almost an infinite number of different designs. And I've made hundreds, most are genetic chaff, but some are keepers.
And you talk about geometric principles being woven into a meditation practice. And so what are some of the other factors that would influence a labyrinth design and installation? I mean, the geometric principles are very important. You mentioned that you personally like natural materials to be used.
Yeah.
But if you're like, for instance, the one that you did at the Jacobean home, what was some of the other criteria that had to be dealt with or taken into consideration?
It's a great question. I mean, study and scholarship is one thing, but getting out there and actually making them requires another state of being, I think. The designs that, let me rephrase that, the labyrinth that I'm most intrigued by at the moment is made out of a big disc, an earth disc, of tilled earth. And I made one for Cordelia down in New Mexico, and we call it the shuffle labyrinth. In other words, you take you have a design in your head, and then you walk that design on a 40-foot disc of earth. And this year, I've made one, in fact, the last 3 years, but this year I've really gotten it going. I've made a 40-foot diameter disc of earth and, cartloads of leaf manure, leaf mold, maple leaf mold from New Harmony. And for me, the process of preparing the ground is so important. The feel of the earth as you put your feet into it is absolutely key. And then the care with which you make it, the routine is certainly a meditation for me. It is very, very thoughtful. And for me, the act of drawing and the act of walking with my feet and the act of tilling or weeding are all one and the same thing. They don't differentiate between each other. And, you know, if you're kind of pissy that day, it's probably best just to walk away from the design and wait until you center yourself again.
So the one that you have there, so this is going to be available for participants to take the leaf mold and make their own designs on this big disc?
You certainly could do that. Yes, it is going to be part of the pilgrimage walk in New Harmony that we're making. Mm-hmm. We're making this 3-hour pilgrimage through the landscape, visiting 3 labyrinths and then going up into an Indian burial area outside of New Harmony. We're going to walk up there as well. Yes, absolutely, it's going to be possible to walk in this design. We're going to walk it at midnight in the dark.
Wow. So you're one of the co-hosts, along with Cordelia, your sister.
Yes.
And you're being interviewed a lot by the local press and the TV for this year's gathering. Do you expect a big local turnout?
Well, it could happen. It really could happen. You never know with these things. It's the first time we've done a labyrinth project in New Harmony. The newspapers are running a big story in it. St. Louis newspaper, 2 hours away, spoke about it last weekend, and we've already had visitors coming over. And then there's a couple of TV stations that have made small interviews on the morning news. So we really hope that there will be a whole group of families coming on Sunday to watch the horse labyrinths make their own chalk labyrinths in the parking lot. We've set up a wonderful artist studio for people to come in and make their own designs. So, who knows what will happen? I mean, it's really, could be a few people, yeah.
Yeah, and depending on the weather, I guess. So this is open to the public. What's open to the public is on Sunday, the equine, the group, the Posey County Saddle Club, am I saying
yes.
that right,
yes.
is going to be doing, again, the demonstration that's taking place on Friday
yes.
for the general public out in the big area and in front of the where you get tickets and that part of that area.
Right.
And
right.
then they'll also be able to go and see the art exhibits. And then you just said that they are also the public is also going to be the art studios open and they'll be able to draw chalk labyrinths on asphalt. So there's a lot
That's
for the
right.
public to actually do that thing.
There really is. Yeah, there's 3 different exhibitions going on. Toby Evans will show her chakra labyrinth paintings and at the Artists Guild on North Street. And then Jim Buchanan, an artist from Scotland, he's in residence here for 3 weeks, and he's made a really fascinating camera obscura project in a 19th century log cabin. And then my drawings are all out and on the walls in my studio. And then at the pottery on North Street, and it'll all be clearly marked, there will be a place to make labyrinths and design them and also be shown labyrinths all over the grounds of New Harmony. Members of the Labyrinth Society, and there's about 8 or 10 labyrinths being built in New Harmony for this weekend. So in this town, all over the town, we will have at least 12 labyrinths that you can walk through. It's going to be a unique event, really unique.
Oh, that sounds so much fun. That sounds so wonderful. So you've been through a whole year of this planning and the process. What has been the most challenging and the most rewarding aspect of co-hosting a Labyrinth Society gathering for you?
Yeah, well, lovely question. I have to say that it would be co-chairing with my sister Cordelia. It's been both the most challenging and definitely the most rewarding. Our family had a family business that went for five generations, ended with my father, and I actually feel that Cordelia and I have continued that sense of the family working together. But that aside, what has been the most delightful aspect is certainly meeting new people whom I've never met before through email. I'm absolutely intrigued by the 12 presentations that are going to be made on Saturday at the conference. Many people who have doctorates in labyrinths, and this is, I think, a kind of new phenomenon in the last, 15 years. Doctorates have been written about labyrinths. So that's going to be fascinating. Our little town of 900 people, it is a very, very thoughtful place, wonderful architecture and landscapes here. We've worked very hard to make the Labyrinth Conference be part of the experience of the town. We're going to be in beautiful 19th century, 1815 buildings, a cutting-edge contemporary piece of architecture by Richard Meyer. The American Legion is hosting breakfast for us, which is really going to be wonderful. Then a local folk artist, Steve Carner, has carved a minotaur out of a tree trunk, which is going to be surrounded by wood, and we're going to burn him on our night. Walk. So I think the most challenging and the most rewarding has been bringing a community together through the community of the Labyrinth Society. So it's a kind of community within a community.
It sounds spectacular, fabulous, fantastic. I am so excited. I can't wait to get on that plane, and we have about six of us from the Pacific Northwest through Labyrinth Network Northwest, the organization, coming and joining you all there, and so looking forward to this and hearing and finding out about this place. Who knew that there was a 200-year-old labyrinth in North America? I mean, I was shocked.
Yeah, it's really startling.
Yeah. And I have also been delighted to have had some of the other workshop presenters on my show, and I think you're going to have a blast with them. Mary Teeter, who has designed over 1,000 different labyrinths, with the beads, and I was like, oh my golly, this is, she and Ben are just going to have their heads together for hours because she's not a mathematician. She did terrible in math on it. But she's come from an artist's perspective. So when I was listening to you, I just thought, oh boy, this is going to be a great time. And I hope we have wonderful weather and for this. And thank you so much for joining me today, Ben.
Yeah, it's been lovely to talk. Really lovely.
Well, I know you're very busy, so I will let you go. Thank you so much. Many blessings on your path. And see you in a couple of days.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to meeting everybody, actually. Okay, see you soon.
Well, bye-bye. Many blessings on your path. It was my intention to enlighten Labyrinth neophytes and support Labyrinth veterans with guests like Ben, who provided depth of information and personal experience not available through other sources. You've been listening to Labyrinths in the News in the live category on blogtalkradio.com with your host, Christiana. I will be taking next week off to attend the TLS gathering, and I will be scheduling new guests for my show as well out of that gathering. So check back on the Blog Talk Radio website, on LNN's website, that's labyrinthnetworknorthwest.org, and on my website, turningtide-energetics.com. After November 20th, for an exciting new list of Labyrinth luminaries ready to share their passion and joy. Have a blessed 2 weeks in Lakesh.